All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Saturday, June 20th, 2015. Pleased to be joined in studio by the man, the myth, the legend, Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop, a Golf Digest top 100 club fitting company on Long Island here. How you doing, Woody?
I'm doing great, Anthony. Happy to be here.
Yep, we got a moving day at the U.S. Open, although I don't know. I don't know if you could call it moving day, considering what the USGA usually does on a Saturday.
Well, usually they're moving the opposite direction.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I don't think they can say bloodbath day, but, you know, I can't imagine there'll be many people under par after today's round.
I agree. I'll tell you what, I'm really excited to talk to John because, you know, he's there. He's seeing it. You know,
right.
What you're seeing on your TV, and I'm sure what he is seeing are two different things. I'm really curious to hear his take.
Yep, our guest is going to be John Huggan of Golf World, The Guardian, The Scotsman. But we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabile has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be to have in studio Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop, and on the line, writer John Huggan, Golf World, The Guardian, The Scotsman. John, how you doing this morning?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for getting up. I know you're on the left coast there, so I know it's a bit early there, but so we appreciate you getting up early for us.
That's all right. Jet lag's a wonderful thing.
So let's talk about, let's start with the golf course. Obviously, that's the story for the first 2 days and has been all week. You're emperor of the golf world, and you come out onto the balcony in your toga and your wreath crown. You give it a thumbs up, thumbs down. What say you to the unwashed masses?
Well, you know, as ever with these things, there's two sides to every argument. Most of the players would tell you that a major championship shouldn't be played on a golf course with greens this bad.
Right.
And to be honest, they are, you know, they're pretty awful. To be honest, there's no getting away from the fact that it is, as I think it was Henrik Stenson said yesterday, it's like putting on broccoli, which is not a bad analogy. But the other side of the coin is, I mean, I spend an inordinate amount of my time banging on about how much, the PGA Tour is the same week to week, and it's the same challenge, and these guys, they're asked difficult questions every week, but it's the same questions every week. And to be honest with you, I mean, I'm sure you're the same as me. You know that these guys can putt well on perfect greens. They
Yep.
do it every week. We watch it on television. So once in a while, you know, I must admit, I'm quite enjoying the fact that it's a slightly different challenge. I mean, it's the same kind of thing if, you know, these guys hit a good drive up the middle of a perfect fairway and the ball lands on a perfect lie. I mean, I know they can hit a great shot from that perfect lie, but I want to see the guys who can hit the perfect shot or a great shot from a ball that's maybe in a wee hole.
Yeah.
You know, the guy with the more talent will... a greater talent will separate himself from the rest, and it's maybe kind of the same with the bad greens. Once in a while, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I think the question, that's just as important to your point. One of the important questions to ask or to be answered by the players is just one of adversity. The fact that you have to mentally get over the fact that This isn't your regular U.S. Open, and I mean in terms of the conditions, and you're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah, I mean the golf is supposed to be a multi-dimensional game, not just a test of, you know, technique, swing technique, or putting technique. There's got to be a mental aspect to it as well, and I think that, as you say, the getting over adversity or handling adversity or handling a bad lie or a bad putt or a bad bounce, I mean, that's got to be part of it. I mean, you know, where I come from and where the game started, the courses are far from perfect. I mean, we don't go for perfect. They're all a wee bit rough and ready, and I think that's no bad thing when it comes to, especially at the top level. I mean, these guys are supposed to be the best players. Surely they should be able to handle a occasional bad bounce.
Speaking about the best players, Sean, for me, one of the bigger stories, underlying stories, is the amateurs are playing so well. Six out of 14 amateurs made the cut. You've got Brian Campbell on the top of the leaderboard. They're in eighth place or so. Mm-hmm. Why do you think in this tournament with these conditions that these amateurs are playing well? Because I can't remember the last time I saw in a major championship that many amateurs play well and make the cut.
Well, the first thing needs to be said is that so many of them get the opportunity to qualify for a U.S. Open. I mean, the championship is billed as the most democratic of the four majors, and I think that's certainly true. It's certainly more democratic than our Open Championship, where the qualifying is the local qualifying right just before the championship begins has been diminished to the point where hardly anyone gets in through that route. So the kind of romance has been lost a bit. And the U.S. Open, I think, to the USGA's credit, has been retained to a greater extent than it has over in Britain. I think you see fewer amateurs playing in our Open Championship now simply because they don't get the chance. And I think if they did, especially on a links-type environment, certainly where I come from, the top amateurs play far more of their tournaments on courses just like where the Open is played, at St Andrews or a Carnoustie. You know, the British amateurs going on at Carnoustie right now. So they've got more experience of that kind of golf than the professionals do, ironically. So they tend to thrive in that environment, and I think there's some of that possibly over here as well, is that the amateurs, they're not used to playing more links golf than the professionals, but they're used to adversity and they're used to bad lies more than kind of just what we touched on than the professionals are. I think the professionals are spoiled to the extent that the conditions that they're asked to play in on the PGA Tour are too perfect, and they get used to that, and you take them outside the narrow confines of perfection, if you like, and suddenly they're out of their comfort zone, and amateurs are not so bothered by that, and that's why I think it's partly why they're doing better.
Yeah, and then you throw in millions of dollars and a livelihood on top of that, and of course anything that, you know, a blade of grass is out of is bent out of shape, and there you go.
As an amateur player, I just loved seeing them play well.
Well,
and we were talking about it this morning. You know, how do you handle the bad putt that you hit perfect that bounced that didn't go in the hole?
Yeah, to your point, Woody, and I'll ask this of John. John, does the fact that there are how many seven amateurs,
six amateurs out of 14.
Out of 14, so almost 50%. Does that speak to is the test more democratic this week, or in a sense that it's to credit of the USGA, or do you think that this is more of a, as you said, these guys are young and dumb and just happy to be there?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, probably. As I say, the opportunity to qualify is the first thing. That's the biggest part of it for me. I mean, the qualifying numbers from all the sites around the country are far greater than, as I said, in our Open Championship. And there's a perfect example. It's not just amateurs. There's a Scottish guy called Jimmy Gunn, who comes from Donoch in Scotland. He lives in Arizona, plays on the Gateway Tour in Arizona. He's a leading money winner on the Gateway Tour right this year. He played on the web.com last year and lost his card.
Mm-hmm.
He qualified for the U.S. Open in Memphis. And now he's made the cut, and now he's going to get a nice big check. He's going to be in an environment that, you know, in terms of the money and the crowds and all the rest of it, he's wholly unfamiliar with. But I tell you what, I bet he's far more familiar with the conditions that he's playing under,
right,
especially coming from Scotland, than most of the players who play on the PGA Tour every week. So it's not just the amateurs. It's guys like Jimmy Gunn, who comes from the third division of golf, if you like, and he's far more used to bad bounces and bad greens and all the rest of it.
Anything that you've seen on site that maybe doesn't come through on TV for the rest of us? To me, it seems like on some levels, the course is the epitome of American excess. It's just so big and bold, and yet, and some places a little extreme, and yet then there's no fans next to the fairways. What are you seeing on site that maybe it's not coming through on TV?
Well, I think you've touched on, you're seeing most of it on TV, it sounds like. I mean, it is unfortunate that I think it's five or six holes where there's basically no spectators. On the eighth hole, there's literally no spectators at all. And the players were commenting on how eerie it is when they hole a putt and there's nobody there to wave to after they've hole the, put the ball in the hole.
Right, that's got to be strange.
It's weird, yeah. But my initial reaction when I had a walk around on, I think it was Tuesday, was that this is not meant in a bad way. This is what Lynx golf would look like today if the Americans had been in charge 150 years ago, and not us. It's bigger, it's bolder, it's everything's exaggerated. It's almost like a caricature of normal Lynx golf, in inverted commas, if you like.
Right.
But that's not a bad thing necessarily. That's just, right. It reflects national character more than anything else.
Sure.
I mean, we're a bit more understated as a race. But I think the course is terrific. I mean, there's some great shots to be hit. I mean, I do think that, the edges are maybe a wee bit over the top. I mean, you can miss by 6 inches and suddenly your ball's 85 yards back down the fairway, having rolled down a big hill. I mean, I think that possibly isn't, the crime, the punishment doesn't quite fit the crime in places, but that's not a bad thing either. I mean, you've got to deal with that. Again, just like we've touched on, it's all part of it, and I talked to Colin Montgomery earlier in the week, and he was, his distance control is almost peerless. I mean, at his peak, I don't think anyone, maybe Ben Hogan, has hit more iron shots pin high than Monty, and I think he's made the cut. I mean, he's thrived to an extent in that environment because his distance control is rewarded more than it normally is, and I think things like that are no bad thing every now and again. So I wouldn't want it every week, but
right.
Once a year, I'm fine with it.
If you were there as a spectator, how do you think you'd be enjoying that environment where those holes you can't go foul player for 18 holes? I assume you can't go foul play 18.
Personally, I'd be disappointed because I like to kind of rove around and see everything. But Jeff Ogilvy from Australia made a great point the other day. He was we're talking about this very subject, and he said, he found that the people, because they were having to sit in the grandstands for longer periods, they basically sat still for 3 hours and watched the group after group come through play the same hole. And his point was that the people watching got a far greater appreciation of what was a good shot and what was a bad shot.
Ah.
And he found that the acknowledgement from the crowd and appreciation of a good shot was far greater than it normally was. I mean, normally, his point was you'd hit a ball into 25 feet and it would spin back 3 or 4 feet and everyone would go crazy. It was a pretty average shot in reality. But now he says because they've watched for, 2 hours or whatever, suddenly they know what a good shot is and they know what a bad shot is on that particular hole. And a bad shot doesn't get any applause and a good shot got, rewarded, if you like.
Sure.
So that was the upside of it. But the downside is, as you say, you can't just walk around and follow your favourites. I mean, to me, that would almost have been enough to not go to Chambers Bay for a US Open. Because I think the spectators, they pay their money. They're entitled to a wee bit more than they're getting here, to be honest. I think the bottom line is that I think I'd be slightly disappointed if I'd paid whatever it is. I shamefully don't know what you pay for a ticket at the US Open.
Well, and it doesn't stop at the ticket. Then you got the price of merchandise and everything else, and so
which is expensive.
Yeah. Sure, exactly. We got to take a short break, but we'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
La Marmite Restaurant is a Long Island landmark. The tradition remains but the menu, music, and vibe are all new. Golfers enjoy our wine selections from the vineyards of Ernie Els, Luke Donald, Jack Nicklaus, and Jim Nance, along with music on Friday and Saturday nights. Visit our website at lamarmeaterestaurant.com for more details. Choose La Marmite for your next night out. We'll make it a special one.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined in studio by Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop and Golf Digest Top 100 Club Fitting in the country, and writer John Huggin, Golf World, The Guardian, Scotsman. John, who's on site at the 2015 U.S. Open at Chambers Bay. John, just to get back to the greens and or the boldness of the golf course, and not that I feel like I need to defend American being excessive or whatnot, but you speak to that character and the boldness of what you would say what Lynx golf would look like if Americans had taken part in it. But to the point of the playability, wouldn't the golf course and to test the best players in the world on some levels, at least in here, if you have greens that's stimping out at 11, wouldn't you need those roller coaster type greens?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's what combination you want to go for. I mean, right. You can go for the big, bold slopes, but you can't have, 12, 13 on the stimp meter. I mean, they've become
right.
Unplayable. That's why on our, you'll see that at St. Andrews next month. Some of the slopes, most of the greens there are too excessive, but they can't really go over 10 because of the wind factor. I mean, if it gets too windy, I mean, the last time the Open was at St. Andrews, they had to stop because of the 11th green was basically unplayable. The balls wouldn't stop. So it's a case of what you go for. You've got to go for the big slopes and slightly slower surfaces, or you can go for slightly less dramatic putting surfaces and greater speeds. I mean, I would like to see a bit of both, to be honest. I mean, I've never understood why all 18 greens are supposed to be the same speed. And I don't think that's really possible, if you think about it. But I think that should be part of the test. I would mix up the green speeds just to confuse the players a little bit. I think that should be part of it.
Oh, boy. John, I think on your golf course, we might have a hard time breaking 80.
Yeah, but it's early in the morning, and I'm feeling a bit grumpy, so maybe that's part of it, too. Yeah.
So that's when you cut the greens, is early in the morning, John. I'm curious as to... from the on a TV, I can't see at all where the green starts and the fairway ends. And I know they said that they've got those white dots or something out there so players can when you walk the golf course, can you see where the green is? It easy to see where the green starts and the fairway ends, or is it like vague like it is on TV?
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely, you can be standing right there and have no clue that. But a couple of times when I walked around on Tuesday, I was standing. I walked with Jeff Ogilvie for 9 holes, and I said to him, believe it or not, I'm standing right here and I'm not on the green. But most of the white dots that indicate the edge, it was kind of odd. I thought it was almost unnecessary because most of them were on slopes, and there was never going to be any decision to be made on whether a ball was on or off the green because the slope was so severe that the ball was never going to stop there in the first place. So
right.
It was kind of strange, to be honest, but... I suppose they needed it in places, and maybe they had to do it. If they do it on one green, they maybe thought they had to do it on them all. But you're right. I mean, the green and the fairway were basically the same surface with the same length cut of grass and the same type of grass, and that's why you've seen so much putting, from off the green. And that's slightly disappointing, I think. I mean, I'm all for short grass around the greens and runoffs and all the rest of it, but the only shot most of the time it is to putt. And I'd like to have seen a wee bit more variety in the choices. The chip shot was basically obsolete on most of the holes, and that shouldn't be. The chip shot should be a part of it just as much as putting from off the green. So that's the only downside of it. But it's been fun watching the balls, the guys putting up hills and having the ball come back down, and that's all part of the imagination and touch and flair and all the rest of it that we don't see enough of in golf, I think.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Take us or bring us up to date, if there is anything to bring us up to date, a bizarre scene with Jason Day and his bout with vertigo. What's the likelihood that he'll play this weekend?
Well, I mean, I'm no expert on that kind of thing. It was kind of disturbing to watch him just walk along and then suddenly, boom, he was down on the ground. And obviously this is an ongoing condition that he's having to deal with. And as I say, the worrying aspect seems to be that the medical fraternity don't seem to know exactly what's causing it. And that for him, that must be a big worry. Whether he can play or not is you know, we'd have no idea at this point. I would hope that he can. I mean, he's only three shots off the lead. He's a potential winner. But it really was disturbing. I mean, I think when somebody just goes down like that for no apparent reason, it was, I think if he'd been anywhere except on his 18th hole, I mean, he wouldn't have finished. I mean, he barely made it as it was, playing, you know, three shots, one from the bunker and two putts. He was very wobbly when he walked off, but I hope he plays, obviously, but I think that'll be up to the doctors, probably.
Well, the to even add to the worry is that it seems to come on for, you know, without any warning sign. Like, it was, so, you know, he could feel like he can play, but it could happen at any moment, and that can't be any fun either.
Well, that's right. I mean, he was walking along, you know, everything normal and all the rest of it, but as I say, it's happened before, and... you know, obviously, the chance he's going to take if he does play, I mean, there's a chance it could happen again, unfortunately.
We're going to, we have about 5-6 minutes left, so let me take one more break and we'll come back. We'll wrap things up with John Huggin and Woody Lashin. We'll be back in 30 seconds. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
It's here at last, golf season. South Shore Golf specializes in golf club repair, re-gripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf, 631-563-2025, 631-563-2025, or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. In studio, Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop and a Golf Digest Top 100 club fitting enterprise. On the line is John Huggin at the 2015 Chambers at U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, writes for Golf World, The Guardian, and Scotsman. John, expectation for the weekend. We've seen 2 days of this now. I'm certain that more people will be coming back to level par if the USGA, you know, sticks to the USGA script. But what are you expecting this weekend?
Well, that's the normal scenario in the US Open. They make it easy, in inverted commas, or easier for the first couple of days. You get maybe, as I think there's 16 guys under par right now, and then they just dial it back in to the point where there's nobody under par by the end, and even par wins. That might not be the case. I'm just cynical enough to think that the new deal with Fox Sports and all that money, Fox Sports might have some influence on this and might not want to have the usual, you know, Armageddon that we see over the weekend in the US Open, and they might want to see a wee bit more excitement. So I'm not sure how much influence they will have, if any. I mean, I'm guessing at this point, but that's a slight possibility. But as you say, I mean, I'm more inclined to think that USGA will prevail in that argument, and by tonight, say, we'll have maybe half a dozen, if that, guys under par. And by Sunday evening, the guy who, if anyone's under par, they'll probably be the champion. They'll be holding the cup up high, and it'll be just yet another US Open won by even par or in that area.
Right.
John, speaking about Fox Sports, do you see anything in the background that's different with them covering than in the past?
Well, I'm not the best one to ask. I mean, I haven't spent a great deal of time. That's the irony of being at the tournament. You don't spend that much time watching television.
Right.
What I have seen is that there's been good and bad. I mean, I wouldn't judge them on their first go-round too much. I mean, they were always going to make mistakes, I think, and some people would work, you know, as commentators better than others. I'm not really qualified to say whether Greg Norman is brilliant or terrible,
right,
or anywhere in between. But I would imagine, given their resources, that in time they'll get it right or close to right. The one worry is that they do enough of it. I mean, I think that's happened where I come from with the BBC. They're moving out of the Open Championship, but that was really the only golf they had left, and it was starting to show. You know, doing it once a year isn't really enough. and the
yeah,
the
I was
starts to get bigger and bigger.
I was actually wondering myself with the cameramen and all. I mean, it's just there's you can't just go do one golf tournament a year and be sharp with the camera and sharp with all the angles. I just don't see how you can do it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right, and I think it's been more difficult than normal for the cameramen to follow the ball against the the colors of the grass here. It's kind of white on yellow, if you like, rather than green, and that's more difficult. So as I say, I'm not the best judge of that this week, and I'd say I wouldn't want to judge them completely on just one week. I'd like to give them, if I was a golfer, I wouldn't want to be judged on one shot or one round or one tournament. I'd like to be judged over a longer period than that, and I think we owe them that much at least.
Yeah, I agree, and what a doozy of a place to come and make your inaugural pass at a U.S. Open, covering the U.S. Open. It's certainly got to be logistically pretty difficult and challenging with this golf course. But so much has been said about the golf course and good and bad, whatever, and different players complaining, not complaining. At the end of the day, it's a pretty good leaderboard when you look at it, don't you think, John?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you judge a championship or a tournament on the winners. I mean, that's one of the great things about an Open Championship where I come from. If you look at the list of winners at Muirfield, say, I mean, with I think one exception back in the 1930s, I mean, the winners at Muirfield tend to be either the best player in the world at the time or very close to that. And that's really how you judge a championship and a venue over a long period is the quality of the winners. And again, with St Andrews next month, nearly always the guy who wins is the best player in the world at the time, or certainly that week. And you don't get fluke winners, and that's really what I'm looking for. I'm a complete snob, I admit it, when it comes to major championships. I want the best players to win. I don't want the the 453rd best player in the world winning a major. But that happens every now and again. It's probably no bad thing. But as I say, I'm a bit of a snob. I want the best guy to win.
I tend to agree with that.
Yeah. You want a quality champion.
Yeah. I mean, some guy who's top 10, top 15 in the world. But then when it's the unknown, sometimes it's fun.
Yeah, it depends, I guess, on the unknown. John, thank you so much for getting up so early in the morning over there. And like you said, thank God for jet lag, because we appreciate to be the beneficiary of it. So we really appreciate you joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Take care, John. Enjoy the Open Championship.
Great talking to you, John.
All right. Cheers. All right. That was John Huggan of The Scotsman, The Guardian, Golf World. And with me is Woody Lesh. And Woody, I mean, John's a great guy, and I'm wonderful insights. And, he's right. There's good and bad in this tournament. And like we said, there's a quality leaderboard. So, there's going to be a champion. I mean, they started it.
It better be.
They started it. It's got to end.
I tell you what, I always enjoy talking to John. He just has some really good insights, and he cuts right to it. He's not going to sugarcoat, and I love that. Tell me what you think, and he's a little grumpy, like I said this morning. I'm glad he's not cutting those greens.
Exactly.
Different green speeds. Woof.
Yeah, that would be. But, to his point, right? Golf has become, though. I know, yes, John can be a little extreme in his railing against the perfections of the USGA, or the PGA Tour. But he's right to the degree that it should be multidimensional. And when you think about...
Well, if you go play Bethpage today, you're going to probably see some different green speeds.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Although I bet you if you went and played... When we were growing up, it was even a lot more different than it is today. I mean, they do a great job today, but...
Sure.
Still, it's the speeds are going to be maybe not quite as consistent as you might like.
Yeah. No, I just think there's a point to what he's like. If you watch the PGA
Tour. If you're doing that on purpose, though.
But I think, to be fair, he's probably right. Golf courses, it's very difficult to maintain the same speed on 18 greens over a property that's, how many of our acres or whatever. So to some degree, I bet you that is true.
I'm sure it is. Well, there's no question they can't all be the same speed. Can't be.
Yeah, it just can't be. So, I tend to agree with John. I think, maybe having totally different green speeds on different for 18 holes might be extreme, but
guys are upset.
If you think they were exactly, can you imagine? Can you imagine what they would be like if John was in charge? It would be crazy. Well, that's it for another quick half hour here with my good man and friend Woody Lashin. Hopefully, folks, you get out there and get a chance to play golf. It's a beautiful weekend, and you should be out there enjoying it. My thanks to Woody for being in studio. Thanks, Woody.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
Absolutely. All right, that's it. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. We'll talk to you next week.
Celebration 1240 WGBB.